All right, thank you, everyone. I would like to welcome you to the Energy, Environment, and Sustainability Committee meeting of March 2nd, 2023. And if the clerk would kindly call the roll.
Manna Jo Green.
Present.
Gina Hansett.
Present.
Aaron Levine.
Present.
Joe Maloney and Eric Stewart are not present.
Okay, and everyone please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. And who would like to lead the pledge? Do I have a volunteer?
I'll do it.
Thank you, Eric.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. And has the committee had a chance to review the regular minutes of February 2nd, our last meeting? And if so, I would entertain a motion to approve.
I make that motion.
And I second that motion.
Okay. All in favor, please. Any discussion on it? Any changes? Okay, all in favor, please signify by raising your hand
aye.
And or saying aye.
Aye.
And then, so motion passes. And the next are the committee reports, starting with the Department of Environment. And I think I saw Nick. There you go. And I put some of the ongoing things right on the agenda, but if there's anything else you want to include, please do.
Okay. Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon.
I will defer to the Shokan, on the topic of Shokan Reservoir water releases, defer to Amanda if there are any updates other than the closing of the comment period for the changes to the IRP, which I know several comment letters were submitted from various organizations, including the Environmental Management Council, which we'll cover in a bit. Amanda, anything to add on that?
I don't have anything other than the comment period closed on Tuesday.
And I think the committee has seen both the county executive and the chair comments. Any further discussion on that before we move on?
Good.
I think they were extremely well crafted. It took me a while because I had some concerns, but I read them over several times and finally agreed. So, okay. Reuse Innovation Center, do you want to go there next?
There was a, on the Reuse Innovation Center, there was a stakeholder Zoom outreach meeting that occurred last month that was well attended. The consultant is continuing their research and developing some of the early deliverables that we've requested through the contract with them, and we should have near final versions of those, at least the first two deliverables in the project for review.
Let me just see, is everybody clear what that is? I don't want to be talking over people's head. Okay, please continue.
On the Hudson 7, I don't believe that the amendment to the memorandum of agreement has been adopted by all of the communities yet, but when that happens, I'll provide an update.
And we will assign, the county executive, as I recall, will assign a representative from Ulster County,
yes,
but that has not yet happened.
It has happened. I am the representative.
Congratulations. Good choice. Okay.
All right. Yeah. And last on the list, thank you for adding this to the agenda. The we at the Department of the Environment are working with a graduate class at Bard College in the Center for Environmental Policy. The class is titled Politics of Solutions, and we've asked the two student groups that are in that class, a total of eight students, two groups of four, to assist us in doing some focused stakeholder engagement around the community climate action planning effort that we're leading from the Department of the Environment for the county. And one of the two stakeholder groups that that we've discussed using as this committee as a way to communicate between the legislature and the ultimate development of this plan, your priorities, your goals and strategies for doing climate action. So it's closely related to the climate emergency resolution that I know is in a draft format now, and that's amending the one that was passed in 2019. And we're looking forward to having the students engage with you on that, in that project. So we're expecting 3 meetings over the semester, starting later this month for the first meeting, then one in April, one in May. We'd be requesting in-person attendance by hopefully a couple, 2 to 3 members of this committee to meet with the students and talk through some of the items that are on that we've asked them to gather, and then understand your priorities. And then really to help them align, have them help us align the climate emergency commitment that the legislature's made, the intentions and actions with our plan, to make sure that we're all on the same page. So,
and because there is an executive order, we'll be looking to find things that are not yet included in the executive order that are reasonable for Ulster County to commit to, because things have changed since the last time we declared a climate emergency, and they've changed for the worse. So we need to be more aggressive. And, okay, anything else?
I will be in touch for scheduling on that. So probably
okay.
The end of March will be the first engagement.
All right, thank you. And UCRRA?
Good evening. So, landfill siting update you'd asked for. So we did release an RFP. The RFP is actually requesting for proposals to let us know what it would cost and how long it would take to do a comprehensive broad study on the subject. So that closes on the 10th of next week. So we should have proposals in by the 10th to start reviewing and see where we're at.
And what is the process for selecting? I understand what it is in the county. We have a very specific purchasing department and planning department, and often the Department of Environment navigates that. How does that happen at the UCRA?
So for this purpose, we're going to be looking at their qualifications primarily to see, you know, what type of projects they've done in the past related to this, and what their staff qualifications and stuff are. And then we're going to pick the top one or two that we feel have the best qualifications that can get us the best result. And then we would ask them to give us a formal proposal of exactly more detailed, you know, what we would get for what we were doing. Then we'd go through and we'd review those details closer to make sure they're going to look at all the things we want to look at.
Is that ultimately a board decision?
Ultimately, yes. I'd have to go to the board with any before we do anything and have them approve it. And chances are board members will be involved in this decision making process the whole way anyhow. So but initially we want to get in, you know, get some proposals that give us an idea of what we're looking at as far as cost and time frame, and kind of see what type of qualifications they have, and then we'll request more information.
Okay, this is a sensitive topic, and I just want to be sure if anybody has any questions about it. I just will put in my 2 cents, and that is that I view having a landfill in Ulster County as a resource to be protected, and I think that as long as the process is done fairly and equitably, and that there's a reasonable host community benefit package for the host community, that it will motivate maximum waste diversion. Less trucks going to the landfill, less odor, pulling out sheetrock, which is a major cause of odor. We already have a composting law. So I'm really appreciative of the fact that, and it's in the county plan.
Yes,
the
way, solid waste management.
So thank you.
So we're going to move forward, and we're going to make sure we do a very thorough and very transparent look at this, so that there's no need for anybody to feel like we're not, you know, doing this to the best of our ability, and everybody can see the process and be, you know, educated on it as we go along. So we also released this Monday. We released a request for statement of interest. And this is asking for anybody out there that has any programs that would help divert more of our MSW from the landfill to come forward and let us know if they're interested in discussing that with us. So we're basically just looking for all those people out there, trying to cast a wide net, get as many people out there engaged in talking to us as we can, and then we'll go through there and we'll look and see what the different entities are offering, and we'll pick some that look like they would fit best for what we need here in Ulster County, and then ask them for proposals.
And I didn't quite hear the beginning of what the subject was. I heard what you're going to do, but
so it's we issued a request for statement of interest to statement of interest. To basically just get people to go, hey, look, we have an idea of a way to help you divert more of your waste. We would like to talk to you about it more, and then give us just a general overview of what their thing is. The board will review all those, along with myself and some staff, and we'll see what looks like it fits for Ulster County best, and then we'll pick a few, and we'll have them give us some actual proposals for what they would like to do, and go from there. See if we can't come up with, you know, another way to address our MSW.
And it's in general for waste diversion?
For waste diversion, yes. And on both of these, the intent that I had was that we would also focus on them with the climate crisis in mind and carbon footprint and stuff. So everything that we're going to do here is going to be focused on how do we best handle our waste with the least impact, negative impact on our environment, and looking at our carbon and stuff. So those are the two kind of major things that we have out right now going on. And of course, we're still working with all of our other education outreach and stuff. We're still working on finding ways to try to provide more services and better services and stuff.
So we had talked specifically about the fact that the municipalities at the town transfer stations used to separate construction and demolition debris, and that I think most of them would be very willing to do that again, and some of us see that as sort of low-hanging fruit. Are you waiting to get the RIF? Is it R?
No, I've in talking with the various supervisors and stuff about transfer stations. The theme I'm getting back is that they're most of them don't have the resources to do much more than they're doing now. And so I'm kind of working more off of this. I need to figure out how to get them more resources, either through UCRA, maybe through some help between the UCRA and the county, but however we can do that. But they seem to kind of be stretched with their staff already and with their resources. So it seems like every conversation I have where I go, well, maybe we could do this or maybe we could do that, it's like, well, if we had the people, if we had the money, if we had, you know, and so those are kind of the responses I'm getting right now. So I'm trying to kind of navigate how we might support them better and help them out.
Well, they did used to, and I don't remember hearing complaints. I'm not 100% sure why that program was stopped, but not sure how much more work it is for them. It's really just directing the people who bring the CND to the town transfer station would put it in the designated container, which the agency would provide. And the agency, if I understand correctly, does charge for the transportation, for the pull of that container. And it would save people having to pull CND out of mixed garbage. So folks, please bear with me. This is my background. I worked at the agency for 10 years, so I'm passionate, and I promise not to take too much time on it, but this is an issue that I'd like to understand.
I will investigate, because I don't know necessarily what changed as far as if it was not commercial CND. For instance, if somebody just had some, they remodeled their kitchen themselves, they had a little bit of CND. I know if it's commercial, from a commercial project, we can't legally haul that. There were some laws that changed within the state of New York that disallow us now to haul commercial waste. That's something that I know changed, and it caused us to say, hey, you can't accept any commercial CND or anything from anybody. So we had to stop that practice at those sites because we can't haul it. However, if it's your kitchen and you did the work and you have it in the back of your pickup, that's a whole other thing, right? So I'm not sure, you know, if that's being handled in a special way, but I'm not sure that there's that much of that going on necessarily either. From, you know, I definitely, in the times I've been at transfer sites, which is not all the time by any means, but the times I visit, I haven't seen any of those types of loads come in. But that doesn't mean they don't. I just haven't seen it, and nobody's mentioned to me that there was a concern about it. I also haven't seen it when it's dumped out on our floors from our trucks that there's a load predominantly with CND in it. I have seen some mixed in there, but we see that in quite a bit of loads. So, but that's something I will definitely go back, and I will check with staff and see and make sure there's not anything restricting it other than the law changes that caused us to not do commercial any longer.
Any other?
I just wanted to say something quick. Just getting back to the landfill sightings, that I think that we need to be forthcoming with all information. I, along with other elected officials, are already getting phone calls from the public, and they feel we aren't being transparent already. So I'm just, you know, I'm trying to, I talk to them, and I'm walking them through what we're doing and where we're at, but we need to just stay on top of the communication. So I just want to share that.
And if I could respond, I will real quick, so that everybody in the room at least knows what's going on. So, for anybody who doesn't know, prior to the current board that we have and prior to my coming here, there was a study done, basically a study of maps and geological type stuff concerning where you might be able to put a landfill in the county. Because that study was limited in what it looked at, the board decided not to accept that as an official document into UCRA, not to use it to inform them of any decisions about landfills in the future there. Basically what happened was that it was just set aside, okay? If it, however...
The board actually didn't choose not to, it just was set aside, but there was no decision made.
Okay, so anyhow, but nonetheless, the document basically was left as a draft document that wasn't, my understanding, legally an official document within UCRA. So it was not being used to make any determinations. However, it did get talked about and was reported through the Daily Freedom. And of course, that created concern because it was also shared by some folks that knew that there were a couple locations out in the Plattekelle area that were identified as potential locations. So we have made that document a public document now. It is actually on our website. You can go there. Anybody that wants to go there and get a copy of it can get a copy of it now, as of today. The only reason why it wasn't put out is because it wasn't be used for anything, and there was no need to cause concern if it wasn't going to be used as a document to show us where to go or what to do. So that was kind of the reason why it just wasn't shared.
Right.
But going forward with this process that we're doing now, this is all going to be very much open. The board will see everything. It'll be public.
And that's what I assured them, but I just wanted to, you know.
Yeah. So, that, you know, it wasn't really an attempt to hide anything as much as it was to go, we're not using it, so why get everybody upset? We're going to do something bigger down the road. So that was kind of where it went. But
we know how things, right, they just will snowball.
Yes.
And that's why we need to just stay on top of them. And
this did. So, yes.
And I have.
So.
And it was basically very preliminary.
Yeah, no, and I I'm just saying what I'm just sharing what constituents are saying to
me
and bringing those to our committee.
And it's very interesting.
Yeah.
Actually, Manna's one of the first ones who, when I met with her one of the first time, she said, Greg, just so you know, whatever that was, it isn't going to fly. You're going to have to do something more. And I went, yes, I understand. And it's because it was a, you know, kind of narrow.
And nobody wants it in their backyard,
so,
as we all know, right?
Well, and that's, you're never going to change that, right?
No, absolutely not.
The only thing I can say is that, you know, I live there. So, you know, it's not like we're talking about people who aren't my neighbors. They're my neighbors.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's where I live. So, if that's what ends up coming down the road somewhere, it'll be a little ways down the road, and if it does, I'm going to be just as affected as anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyhow.
And over the years, I have repeatedly offered my backyard, but it's not big enough. Phil, was that a hand?
Yeah. Director
Legislator
Levy,
Erner.
That's fine. Director Levy, I'm on the UCRA site right now. I see a form to fill out. Is that how the public sees the document?
Yes, if you fill that out, and that's just because that way we kind of know who got a copy.
I'm going to just shut this halfway. Is that okay with everybody?
Yeah.
If somebody has a problem downloading it or getting it, they can let us know, and we'll definitely make sure it gets to them. But so far, it's been working today. So
great.
It's been going fine.
Thank you.
And the one thing I'd like to ask in the Reuse Innovate study, Reuse Innovation Center study, part of what they're doing is looking at waste characterization and maybe to particularly focus on C&D, because I and others think that may be low-hanging fruit, so to get some numbers, and Greg will get some information. And it's not just low-hanging fruit, it's just the idea of having to pull something that could have been separated out of mixed garbage. That's, anyway.
I think there's one thing that I'm hoping that's going to help us. We do have, I'll be interviewing candidates for our recycling law compliance officer here week after next, and hopefully we're going to find the right candidate, and that's going to help too, because we can start getting out and doing enforcement of the laws that are already on the books to get things properly separated and hauled properly to where they need to go, and then we can certainly look at what our C&D rules are and work on that as well. So, you know, I do think there's opportunity here going forward, and we just need to kind of one step at a time, and we'll get there. We'll start seeing some changes and some impacts.
Okay.
So I think this gentleman,
you have a question? Am I allowed to?
Yeah.
I was just wondering if the agency is considering landfill recycling in their RFPs.
It is something that I asked for as part of the proposal that we put out, was that they give us a cost to not only look at the feasibility of siting a a new landfill, but to also go back and reclaim the landfills that were closed and clean them up and reclaim airspace there. So I wanted to compare the two options and figure out which one was going to be the best to have the least environmental, negative environmental impact. So, and come up with, you know, and also be feasible, because you got to consider what DEC is going to allow us to do or not allow us to do, and
right,
all those things too. So, we're trying, I wrote it to be pretty broad. I'm asking them to look at a pretty broad deal right now, and we'll narrow it down a little bit more once we figure out who the players are. So.
Thank you.
If not, I do have a meeting I got to run to because of the plastic kill thing. I actually have to go see their supervisor, so I promised I would go as soon as I was done here.
Okay. Is anyone here to give the report on the environmental management?
Thank you. I can speak for the council.
Okay, thank you.
The council last met on February 22nd. They adopted, or they nominated some new officers and some new representatives to committees. So this committee will be attended by a gentleman named Ted Grease from the city of Kingston. He's the municipal representative in the city of Kingston. And he couldn't make it today, but he'll be here at future meetings or a designee. They also voted to submit a letter of comment to the DEC for the IRP change.
All right. Thank you. At this point, we're going to move to resolutions, and we'll start with resolution number 5, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 12 of 2002, a local law providing rights of the residents of Ulster County to clean water, and for the rights of the Hudson River, also known as, Phil, will you say that?
I won't say it right, but Mahikanatuck.
Okay, thank you. I work for Clearwater. I should be able to pronounce that, and I apologize. To be held on Tuesday, March 14th at 7:05. And I'm not sure if the committee feels we are ready for a public hearing, but maybe a motion for purpose of discussion?
Motion.
I'll make the second.
Okay. Any comments? We just had a meeting that took an hour and a half, so I want to limit comments here to about 10 minutes, if possible. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I just want to, so this is the third time that this committee will have at least begun to look at this, to discuss this. The first time was in December. I want to acknowledge some members of the public who have traveled to learn or perhaps speak about it. If the Chair would permit them to, I would definitely yield time. But I would like to also give a brief summary of where this is at from my perspective, and also invite Councilor Gordon to take some of the 10 minutes that you've offered.
Well, given that, we'll go to 15, but we'll really hold it there.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
And I think the upshot is at the end of the today, I'm going to be asking the committee to take no action, I think is the upshot here, and for reasons that I'll describe in a minute. Basically, this was introduced by me, and it was something that members of the public had worked on and had brought to me and asked me to sponsor, and that was back in the late fall that we got that rolling. We have heard from some folks. I've had Councilor Gordon and I have had three meetings today, having been the third since this committee last met just about this one topic. And we've heard from some other lawyers who have been involved in this kind of work and as to their support for those who, from the public who helped draft it. We have received letters, comments from Ulster County residents, residents of other places up and down the Hudson River area and the watershed, at least as far north as Columbia, maybe even Rensselaer County, and into New York City, explaining how, if not their immediate, the impact, the positive impact they would see from if the law, if we were to enact the law, and if it were to have the effect that I hope that it would have, how that would be of a benefit to them, as well as supporting the benefit that they see for us. We do have the county executive's executive order number 1 that she has announced since this committee last met, and I think items 3 and 4 on that in particular, I would draw the committee's attention to as this law possibly jibing with those aspects of the executive's order. The Hudson 7, I understand, has knows that we're considering this law, and they have been discussing the Champlain-Hudson Power Express and their concerns around that, although I haven't been to their meetings yet, but perhaps Deputy Chair Hansett, as representing one of the towns that are part of the Hudson 7, could weigh in. And I know Deputy County Executive Laval also is slated to go to those meetings. And the next one of those, I believe, is March 16th. And I'm almost done. I'll just stop there.
Yeah. Okay, and who from your committee for the community? Well, one, Attorney Gordon, if you want to do a quick summary of...
I will surprise you and keep it within 5 minutes.
Well, we still have 4 more minutes.
Okay. Very briefly for the committee, this is a law which is very, from an intellectual, legal perspective, is very, very interesting. There's a lot of stuff in it, even though the law itself is sometimes the briefest things have a lot of emanations from them. And this is one of those cases. It touches on a lot of environmental jurisprudence. Very briefly, this law has 2 themes in it which are somewhat novel. One is the right of people to a clean environment, which sounds simple, but is now sort of being enacted in different jurisdictions in the country, primarily as a state constitutional amendment, including for the last year in New York State. And that has, for a variety of jurisprudential reasons, as well as novelty, is just being discovered as to what that means. There's one court case that has come down on that a month ago. It's now on appeal with some novel interpretations, even on jurisdictional issues. The other, and so it's an interesting way to try to protect the environment, and that's what we're discussing, as opposed to typical environmental legislation, which has, you know, you'll discharge this over here and that over there, and you won't do that. This is more keep the environment clean. The other thing is the right of nature types of laws, which in this case means the right of the Hudson River, which is quite a novel concept. By novel in terms of time, I'm talking like last 10 years, but it's being seen in the courts and in a number of different jurisdictions. There's a lot of legal issues that flow from this. The bottom line is, I've had a number of talks with Legislator Erner. We're going to consider whether to take some of this sort of legal analysis and amend the law. One of the things we really haven't talked about very much is the geographic scope of this law. This does not just protect the Hudson River as written. It protects the watershed of the Hudson River as well, which translated for our purposes, at least assuming that we're just talking about Ulster County, which hopefully that's what we're talking about, although that has ecological issues as well, basically covers the entire county.
Yeah.
Because the watershed of almost all the rivers in Ulster County flow into the Hudson one way or another. So what that means is the ecological, as written, and we may not keep it this way because it may have certain impacts that we don't want, but as written, this would be in a clean water rights law covering the entire county. So all the little creeks in your backyard, as written would cover as well. We haven't even begun to discuss that. We've just been discussing the most basic issues. What does it mean to have a right to a clean Hudson River and to have the Hudson River have the right to be clean and thriving? So there's a lot here. I've been meaning, as the chair has requested, I've been meaning to write a memo on it. Every time I sit down to write it, it just expands, including, as I said, the court case about a month ago, which is a very, very big deal. It's being watched all over New York State because we do have an amendment which does make this, even if everybody's still trying to figure out what it means, the fact that it's in the Constitution means that it's a thing. And so we do have to figure it out, and the courts have to figure it out. That's where we're at now. I think Legislator Irwin would say that it's a work in progress, so we'll continue hacking away at it and bring it back at some point.
Yes.
4 minutes.
Thank you. And before going to the public, I just also had wanted to acknowledge that the committee and you had all asked some questions last month that have informed all of the discussion that has ensued since then. So thank you for those, and keep them coming.
And I've been recommending that these meetings take place outside of energy and environment so that we just get a report back. But anyone who wants to participate, the more stakeholders that do participate, and everyone's a stakeholder in this case. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question very briefly for Council Gordon in regards to if you can just provide a very brief summary on what you believe that this law in terms of enforcement mechanisms and teeth. What are we looking at in terms of like what this actually would be able to be enforceable with, and who would be responsible for that? And obviously the Hudson is not just our jurisdiction. Contamination that can occur in other areas.
I won't even begin to discuss the geographic issues that you were alluding to in the last sentence, but it's in terms of just basic enforcement mechanisms. When we met last month, actually, one of the legislators here thought this was basically a memorializing resolution that didn't have any teeth. Another legislator spoke, and she thought the most basic quote-unquote implementation mechanism was because there's a clause in it that says the county executive shall go ahead and implement this to the maximum extent possible. At the time, I didn't agree with either one, although I'm now to some extent coming around to the second perspective. The most basic enforcement mechanism in these laws, typically, that people would think of is private enforcement. It sets some sort of a standard of a clean Hudson or a healthy Hudson or whatever. The idea is that it would be enforced, because DEC, it's not a DEC rule, so they're not going to touch it, really. And the county doesn't have the resources. So the concept for most of these is that it's enforced by whatever private party thinks that they're aggrieved by it. In the case that came down in January, very briefly, it was a big, huge landfill that was permitted, but that was causing problems in the surrounding community. It was also accepting a lot of waste from New York City. So a big chunk of New York City's waste was going to this upstate landfill, and in fact 90% of the landfill was coming from New York City, for whatever that's worth. And so the local group sued and said, because there were violations, but DEC was only partially enforcing against the violations. There'd be some, every now and then, a consent order that didn't really get enforced, etc. What the court said, and this decision is now going to be up on appeal, and this is on a motion to dismiss, so they haven't even litigated the case, this is just who's the enforcer, or what's the enforcement mechanism. The court very briefly said the citizens group tried to sue the polluter, which in this case was Waste Management, running the landfill. Also New York City, acting in their capacity as just, they were the people supplying the waste. The court said you can't sue New York City, they're just not as closely involved in this. And even you can't even sue Waste Management. In other words, this is very important. There's no private cause of action against the polluter coming from the New York State constitutional amendment. But in something which is a bit of a surprise, because that was really the most basic enforcement mechanism, is to sue the polluter under a law like this. But what the court said, which is very, very interesting, is that you can sue the DEC for not enforcing the law. And that's remarkable, because typically, there's two ways to think about enforcing a law like this. One is write a good permit, don't write a bad permit. But that's not really enforcement. That's actually permitting, and you can always sue over that under Article 78. That's not a surprise. But then when the permit's violated, then you come in like, you're supposed to come in like a cop and make them comply with the law. That typically is not, you can't, a private citizen can't sue the DA for deciding not to bring an enforcement action against anybody or going light on a violator. The court held that they could sue DEC for not fully enforcing the Part 360 rules and the permit against this particular alleged violator, which was Waste Management. That decision is going up on appeal, so we'll find out what the appellate division thinks. Total case of first impression. That's the quick answer. But also, the law does provide authority for any local jurisdiction or the state, for that matter, to say we've got a constitutional amendment. Therefore, we as Ulster County or we as the town of Rosendale are going to apply the law this way because we have a constitutional mandate to make sure we have a clean river. So it is going to give a lot of municipalities arguable authority to step forward in ways that they might not have. All this is going to have to go through the courts and to be reviewed because it's all new.
Very much appreciate your opinion on that. Thank you.
Are there members of the public that want to speak very briefly? Okay.
I guess just saying that I'm in support of the law. I live in New Paltz. I think it needs, you know, to be ironed out, and things need to be figured out, and like what you guys are doing and what I'm, you know, participating in. But just as a constituent of the county, I'm in support of it.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I think it's very educational, and we need to bring this to the public, you know, so that, you know, a movement of the people can arise from it. If legislation is not actually going to be enforced, somehow I think educating the people to what we're dealing with.
Can you just squeeze up your name? I'm sorry, I don't know if you either. You said you were from New Paltz, but I didn't get your name.
My name's Amy Clutter. And I'm Pamela Timmons.
From
Port Ewing. Yeah.
Thank you.
And okay. I get my water from the Hudson River. I'm really concerned about the health for everyone. Especially myself.
Anybody else? Okay. I do want to say that what this points out, having just listened to a very robust discussion, is that there is what I would call an anthropocentric bias in the law, and that fish themselves or the river itself do not have rights inherently. As a matter of fact, Attorney Gordon pointed out that we think of things in nature as property, and property doesn't have rights. And so one of the things this could do, and I want to be sure, I think we all want to be sure it's done in a way that doesn't jeopardize Ulster County in some legal machinations are going to probably be necessary, but that it be as sound as it can be, but also to try to open that bias to see the whole world and the ecosystems as part of something we're connected to. Any other comments? All right, so do I hear a motion, or should we just take no action? Or
I believe that's
the
consensus of the committee.
So moving on to resolution number 78. I'm going to do it here because I can read it better. amending the 2023-2028 Capital Improvement Program to establish capital project number 659, ARP Solar Infrastructure, amending the 2023 capital budget, Department of Finance. Motion to discuss?
I'll make that motion.
I'll second it.
Okay. Any discussion? Are we ready to take action?
I believe we are. I am.
Yeah.
Okay, in that case, I will call the question on resolution number 78. As I just read it, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Okay, motion carries.
And Madam Chair, if I just want to say thank you to the Deputy Chair, you know, for sponsoring this legislation. It's going through ARPA, and you know, it's definitely something that I think is going to have long-term benefit for our county, and I think it's most certainly a great thing that we're going to be supporting it.
And I agree with them. I agree with Legislator Levine on that.
Great, thank you. All right. Resolution number 88, amending the 2023 budget to provide Hudson River Watershed Alliance with funding for administrative and program support services to assist various agencies in Ulster County. Motion for purpose of discussion?
Motion.
Second.
Okay, discussion on this resolution. I believe this is, in order for it to be here, it will have passed ARPA. Is that right?
Excuse me.
No, it hasn't passed.
Yes?
The ARPA, as far as I understand it, the ARPA committee used to meet twice a month, and they're now meeting kind of at the end of the committee cycle. So this has not gone in front of them yet.
Thank you for that information. They drill down and they get full presentations. On the other hand, I don't think we want to slow this down, but
maybe we should wait till it goes before ARPA.
Would there be an issue of us potentially, after our ARPA committee meeting at the end of the month?
We're at the beginning of the month.
Yeah.
Did
we not meet in February? I'm trying to think if we. I don't know if we did. If we're trying to take up the resolution before our March session, I'm trying to think if this is going to be pushed. If we wait for ARPA, are we going to have to wait till April for this? I'm wondering.
I would not be opposed to passing it, knowing that it still has to go through a more rigorous process at ARPA, to not slow it down. But
we're meeting next. We're meeting on Wednesday. We're meeting on the 8th. So if possible, could we schedule a meeting for
right before session?
Yes.
Let it go to ARPA.
Yes.
And then, like we've done before.
Yes.
That way it's still in the same month,
mm-hmm.
and we'll have more information.
I think that, yeah, I have no objection to that.
Okay.
All right, so that, I think,
so
we
just
take
no action.
But we do need to, I think, make a motion for the special meeting.
Okay.
Yes.
I'll make that motion to
for the 14th, do we need to set a time? Ways and Means is scheduled at 5:30 on the 14th.
4:30, is that good? 4:45? I mean, it's only going to take us a minute. I'm good with whatever. I always come up early.
That's
so
fine. No objection.
Okay. Let's see.
So you made a motion?
Yes.
I'll second it.
All in favor of the special meeting as just designated?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed?
What time did you say? 4?
What do you guys want to do? Whatever.
4:45?
Yeah. That's perfect. Thank you.
Let's see. We're up to
113.
Yep. Amending resolution number 113, amending capital project number 568, electric bus charging infrastructure project, authorizing the chair of the legislature to execute an intermunicipal agreement with the New York Power Authority and amending the capital project 568. For move for purpose of discussion.
Motion.
Move. Second.
Second.
All in favor? I mean, any discussion? Okay. Hearing no discussion, I'd like to call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion carries for resolution number 113. And now moving to 117. Authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to enter into an agreement with NYSERDA on on-site energy manager consulting services and amending the 2023 Ulster County budget. Motion for discussion?
Motion.
Second.
Okay. Any questions, concerns? Discussion? All right, I will call the question. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, motion carries. And we are complete with the motions. And now we are up to forthcoming resolution number 79, and that is urging New York State to approve and implement an opt-out community distributed generation CDG program for New York. And this is the first time, it's a little bit complicated, it's the first time that we're discussing this in committee, I think. And so we've asked a few people that have some expertise to quickly do a presentation, and particularly to explain the terms so that we can understand. It's not obvious. And so, Dana Hall,
yes.
Would you like to start, please?
Thank you, Chairwoman Green. My name is Dana Hall. I'm a local renewable energy attorney, and I'm on the board of Mid-Hudson Energy Transition, which is the little trifold brochure you have. I'm also here with Simon Strauss. You want to introduce yourself quickly?
I'm also a board member and the treasurer of Mid-Hudson Energy Transition, and some of you know that I'm also the co-chair of the Town of Olive CAC.
So what this is about, and you're absolutely correct, Chairwoman Green, it's complicated and there are too many acronyms. So I prepared a couple of things for you. First of all, this multicolored stapled document is a policy brief that our coalition, Mid-Hudson Energy Transition, and several other nonprofit organizations has been circulating around the state to advocate for this policy change. But in addition to that, there's a little one-page sheet with a green E on the corner. That's the one I want to talk to you from today, which is just to explain what these acronyms are. So CDG, Community Distributed Generation, is the colloquial term we all use, is community solar. All of us know what that is, or I think we have some sense. You get the flyer in the mail, you're invited to sign up, they put it on your bill, you pay your bill, you're done. And it's really a program meant for people who can't put solar on their roof or might have other reasons why they can't do it themselves, but they want to support a local project. It's called DG because distributed generation is technology neutral. There could be hydro, there could be small wind that could be built at the community scale. And distributed, it refers to the level of the grid that it interconnects. You have the transmission level, which is the high voltage wires, and the distribution level. So distributed generation, community distributed generation. It's terrible. Everybody just calls it community solar and tries to be nice to the hydro people. So there is a maximum capacity for that at 5 megawatts. So those are the farms when you drive down the road and you see community solar farms. They're way bigger than you could do for one house. They serve hundreds of households. Community solar in New York is an opt-in program. That means it's voluntary. You get an advertisement, you have to sign up for it. And that's what we're all used to, is opt-in community solar. So put a pin in that. Think about that for a second. The next topic is community choice aggregation, which is a municipally authorized program that the Public Service Commission enabled. And the way it works is local governments, local municipalities, towns, villages, not counties, can pass local laws that set up community choice aggregation programs. And when they do that, what they're doing is aggregating all their customers and putting them together to get a nice supply contract for either gas or electricity. The bigger your market of people is, the more negotiating power you have with suppliers, and you can get better rates. But the other reason it's really good is because it allows local communities to reach their climate targets. If they want to say they're 100% renewable, they can do that through a CCA by automatically enrolling all their customers into a 100% renewable supply contract. So that's what CCA is, and it's an important tool for achieving climate targets. But the Public Service Commission runs these programs, they govern it, they set up the rules that make it, you know, how cities are supposed to set these things up. And because you're automatically enrolling people, you are taking their choice away, in effect. There are strict rules on how you do that and who you can do that with. And in order to protect low-income people, CCAs cannot enroll low-income customers, or what we call APPs. There's a little definition on the bottom here, assisted program participants. So if they're in HEAP or something, they can't be automatically enrolled unless the CCA can guarantee that they will get a discount on their rate. Many low-income people already have a very high energy burden, which we know that term. That's when it's the amount of your income that goes to your energy bill is particularly high. And the state doesn't want to make energy burdens any higher. So if customers are going to be enrolled and they're low income, they have to have a discount. So there's a dilemma then, because municipalities want to go 100% green, but that's not going to be cheaper than your basic supply contract from the utility. So then you can't enroll your low income people. So this is the dilemma that CCAs have. They can't do it. Now, there was a time in 2018 when Jewel Assets got their program approved to put community solar into a CCA. So what that means, that's what opt-out CDG is. Opt-out CDG is when the community solar, those are owned by private companies, and the city who makes the CCA law enters into contracts with that solar developer, and all those bill credits are then put automatically enrolled into the supply of the customers in the CCA. So under the opt-in model of community solar, those companies have to like spend money on marketing and print brochures and go, you know, they even hire third-party subscriber acquisition companies to get their subscriptions. If they do a deal with the CCA, all that's done. The customers are all right there. They save a lot of money. So it can be cost-effective to do community solar with the CCA. And the other thing is, the way community solar works, it's essentially a discount program. So one analogy I like to use is, I don't know how many of you have participated in fundraisers where you buy supermarket gift cards, and I do this through my synagogue. You buy a $100 gift card, but you only spend $90 on it. So you get $100 for 90 bucks. That's what this is. You're getting $100 worth of solar credit on your bill, but you're only paying $90 for it. So you're getting a discount. You're getting discounted bill credits. So if community solar could be married to CCAs and community choice aggregation programs could do deals with community solar, they can put their low-income customers in and give them a 10% discount, which would comply with New York's rule that low-income customers have to get a discount. So that's what we want to see happen. And the Public Service Commission did authorize it for a bit, but then in November 2021, they issued an order saying they needed to clarify the rules and how the billing procedures are going to work. And within 120 days, they said those rules were going to come out. And here we are, you know, not quite a year and a half later, a lot more than 120 days, and they still haven't authorized it. So what we are doing with this campaign, that's this little blue piece of paper, is going around and asking particularly cities or municipalities, towns that have CCAs to pass resolutions, write letters from the mayor advocating for the Public Service Commission to reopen this program. And we're delighted and honored that this body is also willing to take it up, even though the county doesn't make CCA programs. It's in the interest of your constituents who might live in a municipality like Kingston does that has a CCA and wants to use this program. Mid-Hudson Energy Transition, our organization, is the selected CCA administrator for the city of Kingston, and we can't wait to offer this program to CCA, to the customers in Kingston. So that's what this resolution does, and if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Yes?
On behalf of Legislator Petit, she had a question. If somebody is already signed up, like, I use Natural Power Group, which mm-hmm. is a hydro company.
Yeah, oh, I know them. They're great.
And if Rosendale joined a CCA, mm-hmm. How would that work? Because she wanted to be sure that people in that category could opt in and weren't automatically forced to be in the CCA. Can you clarify that?
Yes, I can. And there's a couple of little fine print asterisks down here that get into a written explanation of it. There are some customers who are not eligible to be automatically enrolled. So starting with the supply contract, you cannot automatically enroll in these assistance participant customers. Or if somebody's already signed up with an alternate supplier, you can't take them away from that supplier and put them on this alternate supplier. And you cannot, if sometimes people put a block on their account, they tell utility, don't let anyone touch my account, I don't want any changes. Those people will not be automatically enrolled in the supply contract. Similarly with the CDG, with Community Solar, if you're already in a Community Solar project, you will not be taken out automatically. You could choose to switch. You could say, well, you know, Natural Power Group is nice and I like hydro, but now there's solar, I'd rather do that. You could switch, but you would have to opt in. You'd have to take voluntary action to make that happen.
Okay, any other questions? Because we're running late. I think
yes.
We probably have people at the door.
I may have missed this, but in terms of the county,
we're fine.
Mm-hmm. We're fine.
If the county would move forward, does this make the county a CCA for everybody, or is this like are we generally approving or supporting individual municipalities being CCA?
It's the latter. It's definitely the latter. The Public Service Commission rules are very clear that county governments cannot set up CCAs.
So it's like memorializing resolution.
It's memorializing and just supporting the needs of the municipalities that are within your county and around the state, you know, if that's how you feel,
okay.
that you would like them to have this ability.
Okay.
Yes, please.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to bring to your attention, I'm sure you're familiar with it, but there were a number of localities within the county that had agreements, you know, CCA agreements with a former provider, Columbia Utilities.
We do know it, yeah.
So in Saugerties, you know, I feel that, you know, we kind of got burned by that. Can you allay some of my concerns as to how this is not going to repeat itself?
Right. So one difference is that was regarding the electric supply contract. And this will give me a chance to tell you a little bit about how Mid-Hudson Energy Transition is different. The DEC has a really good graphic which shows the sources of greenhouse gas emissions in New York State. And electricity, the plug load, is only 13% of emissions. 32% of emissions come from buildings, from heating of buildings, and 28% from transportation. So what happened with Juul Assets and Columbia Utilities is only that 13%. It's just the electric contract, the electricity supply contract. Community solar is not the same thing as an electricity supply contract. This would be credits, bill credits, put on people's accounts for a local project that's built. So it's not the same kind of a contract that you have with an ESCO.
Okay.
And Columbia Utilities as an ESCO, you know, I can't really get into why they did what they did, but it is very unfortunate that people were kicked off their contract. I know that Saugerties and other communities are talking to Juul now about, you know, maybe trying to find a new contract. Mid-Hudson Energy Transition also is available to help negotiate supply contracts through our CCAs. So far, we only have Kingston. But
that is just the supply contract, and what we want to do in Mid-Hudson Energy Transition, in addition to community solar, which is a second layer, is the building and transportation electrification decarbonization initiatives that we have, which is more described in the little trifold brochure that you guys have. I'm happy to talk about that more as well. Does that answer your question?
It does. I appreciate that very much. Thank you. Chair,
a brief question and then a comment. I was wondering if you could speak to, just briefly, how this, if there are specific items in the scoping plan for the CLCPA that this supports.
Yes, yeah. I think there might even be some quotes in here on what's how the CLCPA and other state policy documents have referenced the importance of community solar.
Yeah, here we go. Thank you.
Yeah. So there was some reference in there, and it's an interesting thing because the reason we're doing this right now, and you know, we started this in February, January 19th, the Public Service Commission issued an order in the CCA matter, which did not authorize opt-out CDG, but did clarify that there will be a lot of rules changes on CCA, and we're waiting for those rules to come out. But they did talk about a program called Expanded Solar for All, which is National Grid had started a pilot with that. And the difference between that and an opt-out CDG is it allows, Expanded Solar for All would allow the utilities to have contracts with community solar projects, and they would bundle the bill credits, and they would allocate them out to every low-income customer in the service territory. So National Grid had a goal of doing 160,000 customers and getting all of them into community solar, but they'd have to negotiate deals with a bunch of little community solar farms, so who knows how many years it would take to build that. But that would be through the utility. And forgive me if, you know, stop me if I'm getting too technical here. The good thing about that is that there are some local governments who are not passing CCA, who don't care to pass CCA, or who don't know about it yet, or who don't have the bandwidth to do it. And if you're a low-income customer somewhere in National Grid territory that doesn't have access to a CCA, this will let you get opt-out CDG. This will let you get community solar on your bill. So it's a nice, the intention is nice. It's really good to allow low-income customers anywhere in the service territory to do it. The downside is you're talking about the utilities running these programs, and that can be a challenge. They've shown that they have a challenge, a lot of challenges around doing billing. Particularly. So, and what it does is, and we're not opposed to that. We think that's a very important thing to happen because not every town adopts a CCA. It's, you know, many have, but there's a long way to go before they all do. In the meantime, those that have set them up are ready to go and ready to do this. And we don't want to be stopped from doing that just because this utility program might also be on the horizon.
And then the one last thing is the county executive sponsored a bill in the climate action subcommittee at NYSAC asking the PSC to change the rules and authorize counties to sponsor CCA. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if Wednesday morning if that passed in the full packet.
If it was in there, it did.
It was taken up unanimously.
Yeah, okay. So
Amanda,
the packet.
I didn't quite hear that. Did you say... question would be, a county organization?
I have it in the car. I can go get it.
Okay, so I'm going to read the title. So the county executive, who's through the NYSAC has a subcommittee on climate action. Through that committee, she put forward a resolution that was passed by NYSAC, calling upon the Public Service Commission to authorize counties to authorize and form community choice aggregation.
That would have changed the answer to my question before.
But
again, it's pulling NYSAC together to ask the PSC to allow counties to do that.
Would the counties then still need an administrator?
Yes.
Yeah, I think the function of having an administrator is very valuable just because you can have a separate entity help with these things.
I may be thick, And your presentation was excellent and clear. But if somebody asked me, why is it called opt-out CDG, I still can't articulate that. Can somebody give me a sentence?
Because the default is that you're a member.
Yeah, you have to opt. You have to physically opt out to be.
You're automatically enrolled, and you'd have to opt out if you don't want to do it.
As opposed to opting in.
What does that have to do with low income or whatever the term is?
Because the state of New York does not want low income people to be automatically enrolled in any program that would cost them more money than they currently pay.
Got it. Okay. I think.
Yeah.
Can I? And this is, I'm chewing on it too, but typically if a municipality goes shopping on the marketplace for a green product, that comes at a premium. And everybody, even if it's just, you know, tenths or hundredths of a penny, mm-hmm. it costs more. So by lining up the CDG projects, which guarantee that discount on your bill, then that's where you're putting them, so that they're not in the pool with everybody. You don't have enough solar to give everybody a CDG subscription. You know, they're right.
Although we actually
have
to do that.
Oh,
we can
yeah.
do that for all of Kingston. There's
oh,
enough
surely.
In Central Hudson Service
okay.
Territory that we can do that. We've already got 20 megawatts lined up.
Yeah.
For the city?
For the city.
Yeah.
And we'll do it for the county, too, if the county wants to do it.
You'll opt me in, right?
Yeah, and the other thing about opt out. So some CCA, you know, New York State decided for, you know, the benefit of having a large pool, it's better to put everybody in and give them the option to leave than to just start it and say, will you please join us? Because what happens is, when we call it attrition, there's a regulatory process where once the supply contract is announced, there's a public notice period, and we have to send out opt-out notification letters. What that means is we write a letter to every single house and we say, you're going to be enrolled, but you don't have to stay. If you don't want to, check this box, return this postcard, whatever it is, log in here, you can leave. And we give them the steps on how they can opt out. And that's the policy reason behind it.
But that is already how CCAs are set up.
That is how CCAs are set up, yes. So this would just take community solar and kind of do the same thing. They would,
right.
We would, now there is an enrollment priority that the Public Service Commission wants us to follow. As I mentioned before, it had been authorized for a few months and then they pulled it back. But they also did a white paper and webinars and all kinds of work with stakeholders to talk about what this program will look like. And in that process, in that conversation, they explained how to prioritize the enrollment of low-income people first. So that's our objective, and our agreement with the City of Kingston is to prioritize and how we would go about figuring that out. Like, we might even look at mapping and prioritize not just APP customers or low-income customers, but then also look at those who have particularly difficult buildings that they're in. There are different ways to set priorities on who to enroll when, and you know that's part of the CCA design program design that we would be working on.
And if I'm not mistaken, in the CCA where people have the right to opt out, typically about 95% stay in, and approximately
it's
a small number.
Yeah. It's around 90. We in our estimates, when we were trying to model the economics of it, we even went as far as 85, just because of what happened with Columbia Utilities.
Yeah.
I think the
yeah.
public is more aware, and people, when they get that letter, they might have heard what happened in Saugerties, and they might be like, "Nah, that's not for me." So we're being conservative in our estimates, but 85% is still a lot of households.
Okay, anything else? I
want
to try and... I was an hour off when I looked at the clock.
All right.
But we have a few more items. You don't have to stay. You're
okay.
welcome.
Thank you so much.
You're excused.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for that
okay,
presentation.
That's very helpful. For new business, I think we're all familiar with the county executive's climate order. Any... discussion. Oh, this is old business. Any discussion?
No,
on
that's
that?
New business.
No, you have it under new business.
I do. Okay. Yeah, I think that was. Is that since we last met? Well, anyway, it is. Possible revision in terms of declaring, I think right now because of the BARD program, let's let them do a little bit more work on that and then revisit it, because I think it's a really good match. It's real government. We really are considering doing this, and there's a lot of existing documentation that they can go through and then come up with recommendations. So, and then, let's see. Now we're to old business.
Excuse me.
Anything?
Can I just do something for new business?
Yes, please.
I just want to mention that Legislator McLean and myself, along with some other deputy county exec, were up at NYSAC. So I'll just speak on one or one or two real quick, just tell you what I attended. Building a Green Future in New York State, overview of major legislation and rulemaking to watch for in 2023. Chairs Bartel and myself, we attended that one. And then the second one, Legislator Levine and I attended EV charging stations and electric fleet transitions, the ZEB program. Lots of things on funding that I have, I grabbed the packet for our county executive. Lots of discussion. One of the major concerns that came up was, for example, if you have a major storm with freezing temperatures for extended time, how well the fleet will perform in those storms. That was probably the major discussion that came out of that. But it was a great conference, much to learn, and I don't know if either one of you want to add anything to that. When we were leaving, you were attending, and so.
And also, there was actually a resolution that was brought up in one of the NYSAC standing committees regarding ticketing for waste that Chair Bartels and County Executive Metzger were in opposition to, and they vocally voiced their opposition, and actually I believe they also got the support in opposition from other members of the Hudson Valley, other attendees from other Hudson Valley counties, I think including Orange and Westchester. Ultimately, this resolution passed. I'm going to go get the packet. I will bring it up to make sure that so we can get the exact language of what it was. But this was something that the chair and the county executive felt was not in the best interests of the environment. So
what was the proposal?
I'm going to go get it.
I have the packet from Alex Amott. You want me to forward
it? I think it was
that?
On page 30.
I'll forward the whole packet to Chelsea, because if it was adopted unanimously, that's right.
Who'd you say it was from?
From NYSAC, from NYSAC. One of the...
Do you have it up?
I do, actually.
I think it's on page 30.
Okay, so you're looking for just the...
Any other new business? It sounds like the NYSAC conference was really valuable this year. I went
a lot on climate.
So the vast majority were in support of opposing the.
I'll have to think about going next year. I went for many years, and then in the net, I felt like I wasn't getting as much, but. Of course, this is topical, and with the changes that are taking place, I'm really glad to see the focus on it. Okay, so any other new business? All right, moving to old business. I don't know that. The municipal stretch target is really encouraging the towns, the municipalities, to adopt it. I don't know that there's anything more on that. Okay, and then the survey. We didn't get very far. I think you had suggested the pesticide survey. Is that my recollection?
I definitely,
I definitely went to the city of Kingston, I'll put it that way, and I mean, I remember the early, I couldn't say for sure if I was who suggested it, but I had a concern that Mayor Noble had raised to me and asked if the county could take a look. And at least in, I didn't come prepared to talk about this, I'll say that, but the, I think that the city ended up rejecting some recommendations to strengthen the pesticide regulations, to the mayor's and my own chagrin, but that's what I can tell you about what happened in the city of Kingston. And
yeah, and I think the thought was we would each go to our municipalities and find out what the practices are. I do believe that the county stopped using, and now I'm not thinking of the name of the pesticide, on the roadways and replaced it with primarily with manual vegetation management. Is that?
Yep.
There's a local law that dates back to, I think, 2010, prohibiting the county use of pesticides on county owned or county leased property without, there are provisions for waivers in various circumstances.
Is the waiver from, would the waiver be from the administration?
The waiver is from a committee that is prescribed in the local law.
Okay.
Yes.
And Clerk Vialba, didn't you help compile some of this along with Clerk Tantillo back before? So I want to thank you for your work on that. And I remember at some conversation, maybe I had it with Councilor Ragucci also, now I'm remembering a little more, that the state definitely preempts the county.
I told you that.
Oh, you told me that, Councilor Gordon. So.
Yeah. So we can't regulate anybody else's use of pesticides. We're preempted, but we certainly have authority over what we do on our property.
Okay. Anything else? On the zero waste implementation plan, I feel like we've come to somewhat of an impasse. Many, many hours have been invested in a document that is well formed but not finished. And we had hired out of last year's legislative budget, we hired somebody to assist the working group to try to complete that to the point that it could go through a review process with input from the UCRRA, the Recycling Oversight Committee, incorporate that input, and then go to other stakeholders. And, you know, I would say it's maybe 80% done. The person who's working on it gave us a list of things that, with addition, they ran out of, in their opinion, they ran out of funding. They gave us a list of what they could do, which would be the most efficient use of their time, and what others could do to really complete a zero waste implementation plan. And when we say zero waste, we mean approaching zero waste, but basically for maximum waste diversion. The Reuse Innovation Center is a component or a complement to that, that there are things that under the law UCRRA deals with in terms of waste diversion, but there are many, many other things that either could be, you know, repaired, reused, or taken apart so they could be recycled. But the zero waste implementation plan was meant to supplement the local solid waste plan with a very concrete plan for waste diversion. There's a lot of information in the local solid waste plan, but no outline. No, it's not an implementation plan. the way the appendix is for landfill siting or exporting or many other things that are really detailed year by year in the local solid waste plan. But in terms of waste diversion, there are a lot of things that are talked about, but there isn't an actual implementation plan. So I am hoping that we can find the funding to move that forward. It would not be a lot of funding, but otherwise, I feel like all the work that has gone into the zero waste plan will be for naught, and I'd hate to see that happen. I don't know if there's anything this committee can do. Any suggestions? Well, I will keep pushing for that. Thank you. We'll see if we can find some funding to finish that. Otherwise, it kind of falls to me and Tracy, who are two extremely busy people. Let's see. Solar siting law. Dave, maybe you want to speak to this. This was an initiative, I believe, that Legislator Stewart brought forward.
Real brief. I've had a couple of in-depth conversations with Legislator Stewart. This is a law that essentially would create a program by which the county would step up and site solar panels facilities. I've identified certain problems with the law. Number one, it's going to be preempted by the state. The state has a law that where renewable energy facilities are essentially the siting of those, the permission of those is completely preempted by the state now, in the same way that power plants or linear transmission facilities like pipelines would be. It's a third sort of state program that just preempts local law. So our law is just going to be flat out preempted. That's the first thing we need to know. The second problem with the law is that, and I want to circling back to that preemption, although we're preempted, we can participate in the state siting process, and so whatever standards we come up with can become a part of that process. We're probably not going to carry the day, but we certainly can have a voice. The other problem with the law, which is related, but is from the other end, is that Legislator Stewart drafted the law as essentially a zoning law. It would have the county Department of Planning essentially issue special use permits for the solar facilities. In fact, it was adopted from a local zoning law. And so the question of preemption is so odd here because I don't think any county has ever tried to do this before. Zoning is clearly a local municipal function by and large. I don't even think there's a court ruling that says we're preempted, but I told him that, first of all, my guess is that a court would find some way to preempt us on behalf of, not a state program, but rather just local zoning. Secondly, just as a prudential matter, if we try to have functional county zoning, my guess is that a number of local towns would express a great deal of concern about the county essentially leaning in on zoning issues. Now, the law has both this procedure that the county planning board would give special use permits, but it also had some substantive standards. And so what I'm going to try to think through is whether and in what form we can pass those standards, which were like zoning standards, things like setbacks, etc., which might be able to survive as sort of county legislation just saying this is what we want. But there's a number, I don't want to spend too much time, but for the county to do, let's say, environmental legislation on these sorts of large solar facilities, look, what's the county's environmental interest here? So let's say separate from land use, separate from zoning and that local nuisance. Well, it was expressed in terms of protecting forests, for example. You can only take out so many acres of forest. You can't build on certain types of farmland because it's fine farmland. So what would this be? Would the county be stepping forward to protect forests and farmland? And if so, why would we only be talking about solar facilities? Or would it still be targeted at solar facilities, which again starts to make it look like a zoning law? So there's a number of challenges here, starting with the state preemption, although we do have a certain right to step forward I want to leave you all with one other thought on this, which is going to be a recurring theme in a lot of our environmental legislation, including some of the things that we're working on with Legislator Erner and some of these other issues. One thing that the county can do, and really doesn't need permission from anybody to do, is to have people in the county that can attend other people's hearings, either in person or by writing letters, and represent the county perspective. Because, you know, most environmental issues are being permitted by somebody, and or they have got to go through a seeker process where some agency's got to consider this. And rather than, and I'm not saying the county shouldn't try to legislate, but when we try to legislate rules, there's a whole set of structures we've got to deal with, and what are we really doing? But if we were to have people that could act as advocates for ourselves and for our issues, that could get a lot of the same things done. And I want to point out, especially because Deputy Executive LaValle is here, 2 years ago, when in a previous permutation of the cat alum issue, the issue of the SOPIS, the county put in a 50-page comment on the EIS, Ms. LaValle wrote it, and on the draft speedies permit, and that probably had some role in the state pulling back from that. And by the way, so did other environmental groups did, and I happen to have worked on that for one of the other environmental groups, so it was a kind of a joint effort. But when the county steps forward as a county saying, number one, we care about this, and number two, we've done the research and analysis, and this is what you're doing to us, it has a role. And that's exactly what the state is setting up with solar. They're saying, you don't have any localities, you have no right to permit this. We're going to go through a permitting process, but if you've got concerns, and by the way, it's the same thing with Article 10, which is for power plants, and it's the same thing with Article 7, which is for things like CHPE, the linear transmission facilities. They say, you don't have any right to zone this, but, you know, we're going to set up a permitting process and then tell us if you've got problems. And sometimes, under Article 10 and Article 7 at least, you can get funding to do, local groups, whether they're in government groups, municipal groups, or even private groups, can get funding. So one of the things that I'm going to recommend to some extent that we begin to think about is, do we want to bulk this process up so the county has resources to do the analysis and to do the legwork of stepping forward in this instead of trying to legislate it? Just another thought, because that is very much going to come out of Legislator Stewart's proposal, because we are not going to have jurisdiction. One way, we're not going to have zoning jurisdiction, we're not going to have jurisdiction at all because of the state preemption. But if we have an issue with, let's say, a solar project that's going to be, let's say, take out prime farmland, or is going to chew up too much of a forest that we care about for habitat, or for that matter, is going to be backed up against the ridge and wipe out some of our scenic vistas, that's very, very important to the county, we've got to be able to communicate that. And we may not have the ability to deny a permit for it, but at some point we may want to make sure that we have more than one person in whatever county department. We've got the Department of the Environment here, we've got the Deputy County Executive and somebody who was also in planning. These would be the folks that would come to and say, can you get on this? And they'd be turning around saying, you know, do we have the personnel? So just a thought that I have. I don't know if it works at all, but at the end of the day, as we talked about with respect to the right of nature law, at the end of the day, the tough environmental issues get resolved because people show up at meetings and fight for their perspective and show up with the science and show up with the analyses. And that ultimately, we can say all we want about this is our right and, you know, we're demanding this, but there's a lot of other perspectives. And in my experience with, you know, more than 30 years fighting for these things, the person who shows up and argues the best and the smartest, not necessarily the loudest, but doesn't always hurt, gets a lot done.
Go ahead.
And just to put a dollar figure on it, because that was excellent, the CHPE fund is $117 million to environmental benefit projects.
On Article 7.
Yeah.
So that means that in the Article 7 state permitting process, even though everybody else is preempted, the $117
million?
They provided $117 million for any interested group, whether it could be a municipality, but it could also be just a citizens group, a riverkeeper, whoever else. Say this is what. Now the money typically has to go for technical analysis. They don't always give it to lawyers, which is. But you hire a smart person with a couple of letters after her name. That's what the money goes for. So the state is saying, here, take it, tell us what you want. So there could even be the ability if the county did this to actually fund the program through some of, if it's Article 10 or Article 7, God forbid we get, you know, pipelines and power plants coming through the county, but other things, who knows? So, but at some point, if, to the extent we step forward and push this legislation, we're going to need the expertise. Even if we do the permitting, we're going to need the expertise. So, just a thought I want to put in your minds. But Legislator Stewart's proposal, it's going to have to be rethought because we're just going to be preempted all around.
So it sounds to me like it is zoning, and it is at the municipal level. It can't be at the county level, or not easily.
Well, but even the zoning is going to be preempted too. So, in other words, what can survive?
Oh, by Ori's
proposal, the procedural stuff is just going to have to go. There's no permitting. The substantive things, we want to protect farmland of certain types of soils, certain amounts of don't chew up more than X number of acres of a forest. Whatever things we care about, if we can find the proper way to express those, we can put it on paper in a law somehow or a resolution, and then if we can get a person who can go to ORES, which is the state office that was set up to fast track the permitting of renewable energy facilities, we will need somebody to intervene in that process in a serious and intelligent and productive way to say, hey, look, we're Ulster County. We've got some things. We don't want to lose our farmland. We don't want to lose our vista or whatever it is. So you need to rein this thing in. That's the advocacy that's going to have to take place. And it's going to be a tough sell because ORES was set up to basically knock out any constraints that is going to get in the way of renewable energy siting. So that's where Legislator Stewart and I have had conversations. My last conversation, I think, was basically preemptive enough that he's in the process. I don't want to speak for him, but I think he's probably in the process of rethinking where we'd go. My recommendation would be get rid of all the procedural stuff. Let's get the substance boiled down, maybe make some findings, and then figure out the best way to package it and see what we can preserve out of it.
And why this came up is that we keep getting requests for pilots, or what are essentially reverse pilots, for solar projects, and because we have access to the Scenic Hudson solar mapping tool, we've been using that and finding that these projects are taking out 20 acres of trees at a time, which
carbon sequestration
and it just seems like there needs to be a way to give some some way of enforcing the guidelines that I think Scenic Hudson has created.
Let me. Legislator Stewart's substantive rules of the things that the real rules that we don't want to let them do, like you have to have setbacks, etc. They were all borrowed from essentially the Marble Town zoning code.
Yes.
But you're raising a very important point. Not only does Scenic Hudson have a mapping tool, they've also got like a manual as to how we deal with solar. And if we wanted to go to that manual, take some of the Marble Town things that we've got, which is the setback and some of the other things, but also go to the Scenic Hudson thing and say, what's good here? This was written for us, so let's see what the state, this is a statewide program, so they're not necessarily looking at the beautiful Hudson Valley. Scenic Hudson is. So maybe one of the things to do is to go to that Scenic Hudson manual. Let's get out all the substantive standards that we think should apply, only so many acres of farmland, so far away from the ridge, what sort of vistas, whatever they've got. Maybe we should write it up and then try to sell, and then we need to sell it to the state on a case-by-case basis, as ORES is fast-tracking it. But again, we need a person who to go there and say, hey, you got to look at this.
And fast-tracking makes sense because we are in a climate emergency and we're not getting the infrastructure in place.
That's why the state's done it, but we still want to make sure that our county, that they're not taking out too much farmland if there's an alternative, et cetera.
Is there any way to tie the decision on the pilot, the reverse pilot, to a set of standards, or have like a prorated table saying you won't get as much money if you don't meet
the
criteria?
No, but the reverse pilot's getting up. The problem is it gets us.
It loses us money.
Is there any way of structuring it? And I'm not familiar enough with it to make any of those standards kind of
since the pilot is our decision, but at that point we're just sort of holding a gun to our own head. It's like They're offering us money. What are we going to say? We're not going to take. We're going to take. How do we structure that?
We won't. Yep. Right, because then if we don't agree, it just goes in.
They're offering us money.
My recollection was state offered counties the option to opt out of the automatic basic, whatever kind of tax would have been assessed, to opt out of that automatic discounting of that tax so that we could impose a tax unless they meet the criteria that we set up.
Yeah, but that's tough. That's true, but that's a tough sell, because if we opt out, that basically we're saying the hell with renewable energy and that.
No, that's not what we're saying. My point is we're going to do what the intention of, I think, of Legislator Stewart's legislation. I think we would then say this is what you have to do to get the tax credits. You have to not destroy our farmland. You have to not mow down a forest. You have to not pollute our environment for this supposed environmental project.
I can look into whether that's legal. My guess is my seat of the pants, which I'm not supposed to do, is I think it probably is. But again, the message I'm not sure what the county executive is, but the message is going to be, we're sort of putting a big stick in the wheel of this, you know, this renewable energy juggernaut, and there may be a lot of people that think, well, that's great, but we need the renewable energy is number one, and everything else is secondary. And there might be a lot of people in the county that feel that way. If you want to try to do that, I think it's probably legal, but we'd have to reverse the current state and convince a lot of people that want to see renewable energy that we're not standing in the way of progress.
The thing is, in the net, if you're destroying trees and farmland, you're certainly having less of a climate benefit.
I'm a land use guy, so I'm with you, but again, there's a lot of people that want to see the...
Look into that, and, you know, we'll just keep brainstorming. We're not going to move forward with this because it's not ready, but, okay, let me just see what else is on the agenda. Where did I put the...
Climate
here it is.
Amanda, where do you think the administration would be on that idea?
I don't know. I can't. This is... brainstorming session.
All right.
You hear the issue though, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. And Nick, you would have to clone to do the additional staff. You would have to clone your staff in order to.
Sure.
Okay.
We can legislate cloning for you.
This is the kind of the
in favor.
You described of having advocates at the county level to do that type of work is the kind of thing we want to capture in our climate action plan. So if we can, when we have the student group engagement with the committee,
yes,
maybe they can spend some time with you, Council Gordon.
And one of those students could just come up with a brilliant solution that none of us have thought of. So.
Right.
Climate Smart Committee didn't meet, so we can get out on due to the weather, the storm. But there are some important things. But I think...
Are they meeting on the 27th? At the end of the month, they're still...
Yes, but I just don't have anything to report.
Okay.
Any other business before I seek a motion to adjourn?
Is this closed still? Or?
You're welcome to come in. We're just about to adjourn momentarily.
Okay, I'll wait till you. Sorry.
Oh, just a point of clarification, Madam Chair. In regards to Hudson 7, do we know if that appointment is going to be subject to confirmation by the legislature?
The law says it should be. Sorry to interject, but the law we passed said that it is.
Well, if we can somehow get that onto our docket...
Agenda.
I don't think there would be any question about it, but I didn't remember. I remembered it was in consultation, but then we modified it, that the county exec would do the appointment and it would come to the legislature. Is that your record? Yeah.
So serving in an acting capacity upon, you know,
appointment.
Confirmation.
Pending confirmation. Okay. Anything else? I would be glad to entertain a motion to adjourn.
I will make that motion.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Thank you. And this seems to be working. This 3 o'clock.
Yeah. Much. Yes.
It's
yes.
better than getting out at 11.
Well, for the time being, I'll have to see if into the spring if I might have an issue, but I'm not sure yet.
All right.
We'll try.
We got through this.